The length and quality of your nightly sleep or your sleep during the 24-hour cycle correlates directly to the length and quality of your life. So if you're not sleeping well now, don't expect to live for a long time and don't expect to live healthily. We have to understand that being awake is actually low-level brain damage. At 20 hours of sleep deprivation, you are more mentally impaired than somebody who is legally drunk. So just imagine you are lying on a bed waiting for somebody to come and stitch up that little wound in your leg that you caused because you were sleep deprived. And in comes a doctor. Frankly, would you trust him or would you trust the guy with a bottle of whiskey in his hand who comes in slurring his words? Well, the two are equally compromised from an intellectual and balanced point of view.
Welcome to the Fail Forward podcast, where Dan and Adnan peel back the onion on our guest stories and on each other, all in an effort to change the narrative of failure. Enjoy the show.
Welcome back to Fail Forwards with Adnan and Dan. David, it's great to have you back. How are you doing today?
I'm very well. Thank you very much for having me. Fail Forward is one of those podcasts that I think is going to grow and grow. So I'm delighted to have the opportunity to come and talk with you guys.
Pleasure, David. And we have Dan here as well. How are you doing today?
I'm doing really well and also super excited for this podcast episode. So this is, you know, the first episode we did with David, you know, when we first started out. For us, we learned so much and wanted to hear more from David and, you know, let him share his wisdom again, you know, with our listeners and more, you know, more selfishly to us as well. So
for sure.
So here we go.
And good news, we're actually recording this out of Optimal Fitness Studio outside Studio City, Dubai. So you may hear a little bit of an echo, but it's amazing that we get to record inside this space and with, of course, the well-renowned David Labouchere. So David, in the spirit of failing forward, we generally all want to talk about a topic that maybe is just recently beginning to get known and understood: sleep. Where do you want to start?
Well, I've come to a realization quite recently that sleep is the foundation of everything. Whether you think about sleep as a recovery period, or whether you think about it as growth, or whether you think about it as weight loss, sleep is going to impact every part of somebody's wellness, whether it's mental, physical, emotional, even spiritual wellness is based on sleep. So sleep to me is very important. And I am reading a lot of the science, and it's only recently beginning to be really understood. But there are some great experts, scientists out there who will talk about sleep. And what you hear from me is plagiarism. I am going to plagiarize all the science that I have read and understand. And I only pick it up where it feels right to me. So it's sort of a personal understanding of the sleep science.
And David, why is sleep important to you? Are you a performer? Are you a family man? Like, where does sleep help you in optimizing your life?
Well, the first thing is that I have some pretty specific and high goals. And one of them is to live for a long time. At the age of 53, I decided I was halfway, which means I now must live to 106, and not just live to 106, but live healthily and productively and have fun to 106. And indeed, I'd really like to get sick and die the next day at 106. So I don't want to be sick before that. And in order not to be sick by 106, I started looking into longevity. So the first area that sleep really counts is longevity. And there is a huge body of scientific data that says that the length and quality of your nightly sleep or your sleep during the 24-hour cycle correlates directly to the length and quality of your life. So if you're not sleeping well now, don't expect to live for a long time and don't expect to live healthily. But if you do concentrate on your sleep hygiene right now, then there's no reason why any of us should not live for a very long time.
Have you had any failures with sleep in the past?
Absolutely. I fail almost every day on my sleep because, of course, there are so many pressures on one's sleep these days. Now imagine, 200 years ago, there was no electric light. And therefore, when the sun went down, You had two options outside of sleep. Eat or make love. That was about all that was left. And sit around a fire between eating and making love, perhaps. But actually, you just went to bed early. Because there's only so much eating and making love that you can do. And then you go to bed. And you wake up when the sun comes up. Because, of course, then you can work. Because nobody could work outside of the cycle of the sun coming up and the sun going down. Now, we have electric light. Which means that we can all work. We can do all sorts of things after the sun goes down. And therefore, we do. And we do all sorts of things such as, you know, being present, socializing, going out, playing, I don't know, top golf, going to the gym. We do all sorts of things that we couldn't do when we didn't have light. So now we have gone from an average probably of around 10 hours sleep over the year to less than 6 for most Western, you know, middle class lucky people. Now, not surprisingly, we haven't adjusted our bodies in that time. Not surprisingly, evolution doesn't take place that quickly. We've been around for 3,600,000 years. Well, we haven't evolved yet to deal with this lack of sleep. And therefore, we compromise all sorts of the system of systems that is our body. And we are just a system of systems. So that compromise is significant when we lack sleep. Now, imagine you sleep 8 hours, which is pretty well considered the gold standard now, which might not be long enough. When you consider that the real high performers in this world, whether they're boxers or motor racing drivers or Usain Bolt running the most incredibly fast times over 100 meters for, you know, less than 10 seconds or 200 meters less than 20 seconds. Well, Usain Bolt sleeps between 11 and 12 hours a night in order to reach those levels. So we are compromised if we don't sleep. And if we sleep 8 hours, well, that's considered pretty well the norm now. That's a good number. But if you sleep 7 hours, then you are twice as likely to slip and fall over because your system is tired and therefore you won't catch yourself. The muscles won't fire quickly enough to stop you falling over. Your balance will be compromised and therefore you fall over in the first place because you hit the lip on the little bit of curb because you are sleep deprived. So you're twice as likely to get injured if you sleep 1 hour less than 8 hours. Twice as likely to catch a cold, or, in the spirit of the moment, COVID. Twice as likely to get COVID if you sleep 7 hours instead of 8 hours. That 1 hour of sleep deprivation on top of what is considered to be the gold standard, and probably isn't, that 1 hour makes all that difference. Now imagine, and some people listening to this will be thinking, I'm lucky to get 7 hours. I normally get between 6 and 7 hours, in fact, under 6 sometimes. Well, now you're 4 times as likely to catch COVID, 4 times as likely to get a cold, 4 times as likely to make a mistake at work, 4 times as likely to lose money because of that mistake at work, 4 times as likely to say the wrong thing to your wife and therefore have an argument. So sleep is actually going to be tied not only to your productivity and the fact that you are a high performer, but sleep's going to be tied to every mistake that you make. Because sleep deprivation is a thing, and it's a real thing. Imagine you stay awake for 20 hours. You're now sleep deprived. Most British young doctors in our hospitals are working 20-hour shifts. At 20 hours of sleep deprivation, you are more mentally impaired than somebody who is legally drunk. So just imagine you are lying on a bed waiting for somebody to come and stitch up that little wound in your leg that you caused because you were sleep deprived. And in comes a doctor. Frankly, would you trust him or would you trust the guy with a bottle of whiskey in his hand who comes in slurring his words? Well, the two are equally compromised from an intellectual and balanced point of view. And you're going to let him stitch up your leg or even wield a knife on you? It makes you think about sleep. So sleep initially is about my longevity. And my failure at the moment is that I have a wife, I have children, I have friends, I have Netflix. And all that conspires to use my evenings when in fact I should be in better sleep.
There's something I heard recently about Netflix. And it was the owner of Netflix that said his biggest competition isn't another company, it's sleep. That's what he's...
That's what he's trying to defeat. He's very good at it, by the way, him and several others in that particular, in media. Because, of course, media are actually competing for your awareness. They want your awareness. If you're asleep, you control your awareness. If you're awake, they want it. Whether they are Facebook, Meta, whether they're Twitter, Elon, whether they are a TV company, a newspaper company, a TikTok company, it doesn't matter. They all want your awareness and they're competing for your awareness. And I love the idea that Netflix feel that they are not competing against the others, but they're competing against sleep, because I agree with them. And unfortunately, too often, don't know if you've seen Gangs of London. It's brilliant, but it's also very watchable. And of course, Netflix just turns you on to the next episode. You don't have to wait a week. You don't have to have any adverts. It just moves straight onto it, and it even cuts out the introductions. It's so much easier to watch several versions than it is to stop.
And that's the problem, it's easy.
And easy sells.
And how do you think that can change? I mean, it's a big problem. And I feel sat here today, slightly sleep deprived, because my son woke up in the night, or I've got a cat that's roaming around that meows and it wakes me up, and I don't feel my best version of myself already because I know I've had broken sleep.
Well, if you track your sleep, then you can see just how broken it is. And unfortunately, there are different phases of sleep, all of which have a physiological value to us. And if we don't have all of those phases, or one of those phases is suboptimal, then we are going to be suboptimally rested. Now, it's not just rest. Sleep ties into all sorts of areas. For instance, sleep ties to your ability to do endurance racing. If you are sleep deprived, you are going to reach fatigue or exhaustion up to 25% sooner. Imagine that your race is a 10-hour race. Well, if you're sleep deprived, you're going to stop at 7.5. Stop. That's it. You're out of energy. It's gone. Because I've never been able to blame it purely on sleep, but I'm absolutely certain that I am not optimally training around my sleep. And what we say and what we know is that you should be tracking and planning your rest rather than tracking and planning your exercise. That's where the value is. So we often say now that we'd rather you spend an extra hour of quality sleep in bed than get on a treadmill, because it will be more value to you in terms of, let's say, losing weight than getting on a treadmill will. Sleep is actually most likely the most efficient way to lose weight and increase your health and wellness. Now, that sleep should be before midnight. And these days, many people go to bed soon, a little bit before midnight. They consider midnight to be, as long as I'm in bed by midnight, that's all right. Well, midnight is exactly that. It's the middle of the night, which means you are basically sleep deprived all the way up to the middle of the night. And this affects your weight. Because just imagine, if you're asleep, I've never met anybody who can actually eat while they're asleep. But when we're sleep deprived, a little hormone called ghrelin is produced by the body. And that makes you want to eat. Not only does it make you want to eat, but it makes you want to eat the wrong things. Who listening to this, including you two, get the munchies last thing at night. And those munchies are for something sweet. Where are the chocolates? Anybody seen the Quality Street Christmas? Gotta have them. Yeah. There's chocolate everywhere. There's chocolate in the fridge. There's chocolate on the sofa. Yep, there's chocolate. Well, who is managing not to eat that chocolate? Very few people, because you're all sleep deprived. And therefore, ghrelin is saying, hey, have the simple sugars. Have the simple sugars. That'll give you energy. It'll give you energy. It'll give you energy. Because, of course, the reason ghrelin rises, and it's all about evolution, is that the body assumes when it's sleep deprived that you're away from the tribe, you're away from the safety of the village, you're away from your community. And the body assumes because you are sleep deprived, something is wrong. And therefore it craves fast energy so that you can run away from the saber-toothed tiger, so that you are primed for quick action, because obviously you are not safe. So what we need is to get back to that safe place where we are getting sleep, which tells the body that it is safe, because you can only sleep when you're safe. And therefore, you won't have ghrelin. You'll have leptin instead, another hormone that says, I'm full. You don't need anything more. This is enough. This is what you need. So I put a huge amount of emphasis on sleep and the electric light as being to blame for the epidemic of obesity that is currently hitting the world. Not just the Western world, but the world.
The electric light.
The electric light.
Blue light?
Not just blue light, but the fact that we have light when the sun goes down.
Just in general.
And blue light is, well done, Dan, you're spot on. Blue light is very damaging in the evenings because it actually stops you producing melatonin, the sleep hormone. It suppresses melatonin because, again, from evolution, our bodies see blue light as morning light, time to get up, time to wake. But if you give your body blue light in the evening, your body is now going to be extremely conflicted. You're tired, and yet there's blue light, which means we've got to get up and get going. So these screens that we surround ourselves with, the TV, Netflix, the lights that we put in our houses, often blue lights, sharp, hard lighting, all very bad for our sleep quality, and therefore in the long term, our health.
How do you manage your desire to sleep well with the requests, demands, needs of the family, of your environment, of potentially a professional life that may start earlier in the day, may end later in the evening?
I think none of us are very good at this. We're looking at each other and going, shaking of heads. We all know the answer that we're not very good at this. How could you manage it? Mm-hmm. You put it on me. And I'm going to tell you this is one of my failings. It may be that I manage it better than some, but I don't manage it well enough to be optimal. Now, how should you manage it? Well, you've got to put boundaries around sleep. You've got to put boundaries around your sleep hygiene. And there are many ways to do this. One is to have a specific and 7 days a week, 365 days a year metric around when you will go to sleep. Now, you've all realized that this immediately means that so-and-so's birthday party next week is going to be a real drag because you're going to get there and then have to leave and go back to bed. So it really affects your social life. And of course, we are a social animal. But the problem is nowadays, everybody socializes late because of the pressures of work. So they try to get their job done. Then they go home, they get changed, they go out, and they're not out before 8:30 or 9 o'clock at night, which is just the time when we should be going to bed. So there's a compromise here. You compromise your community and your relationships for your health and wellness. And that's all caused by, well, our working environment. Because we can work beyond dark o'clock, we do. And that pushes everything else later. So how could you sort this out? Well, you have to make decisions, and they're hard decisions, around your socializing. Because we know that being sleep deprived is something that you can't get over in a couple of days. There is no, I'll sleep in tomorrow morning. That doesn't do it. That just upsets your body clock even more if you then try to lie in the next day. So one rule that we apply is that we go to bed as close to the same time every night, and we get up at exactly the same time every morning.
Routine.
And that means that when we in our household invite people for supper, we actually invite them not for a time to arrive, but we invite them for a time to leave.
How does that go down?
Well, initially, it shocks people. So, please come to supper, leave by 9:30.
And then arrive whenever you wish.
Absolutely. We will be ready. And the point there is that at 9:30, you have to actually follow through on your threat. At 9:30, I get up from my own table in my own house with my own guests. I bid them good night and I walk up the stairs. It's amazing how they all go home immediately afterwards because they were invited for 9:30. That's when they were invited to leave. And therefore, they came on the basis of that understanding. And once there's a bit of a joke and a laugh and off they go. But actually, the next day, those lovely thank you letters all say, isn't it brilliant to get a decent night's sleep after going out and having a great crack? And if I move nothing, if I can get a few people to invite people to leave rather than invite people to arrive, then perhaps that's going to go to their own sleep and allow them to stick to a good sleep hygiene. The number one precursor of great sleep is routine and rhythm, and rhythm around the circadian rhythm as far as possible within this modern world of electric light and work.
The one thing that really stuck out to me when I got my sleep schedule in check was the fact that sleep is a really good domino habit, is what I like to call it, because it is one habit that has such a profound impact on improving all the other habits in your life. If you sleep by, let's say, 10 or 10:30, you're no longer going out and spending money on unnecessary food. You're less likely to go out with the friends that drink. You're more likely to wake up in the morning, more likely to meditate, more likely to have clarity about your following day and attack it with the most vigor you can. And I saw this in my own life on the moments where I really got my sleep schedule in check, because it made everything else work.
Adnan, that message is why this podcast, Fail Forward, is going to be so successful, because that message is about as important as it gets. Sleep is the number one longevity, number one health, number one mental health, number one emotional health correlation that you will ever have. If you're sleep deprived, your mental health is going to be compromised, your emotional health is going to be compromised, your physical ability is going to be compromised, you're going to fall over more often, you're going to damage yourself, you're going to catch those horrible bugs. And you've just made a great point. Let's get sleep organized and let's make it normal to go to bed at, in your case, 10 or 10:30, rather than midnight, the middle of the night. And if we can do that, we're going to change a lot of people's lives. Now, let's take this this idea of our physical health. When we are sleep deprived, we have bad, worse habits around what we eat and when we eat. And that obviously has a knock-on effect and is largely correlated to this epidemic of obesity. I read the other day that 80% of the British National Health Service budget is spent on obesity or obesity-related disease. And here we have something we can do, and with our children as well, that will have a straight impact, okay, in the long term, because it'll take a while to filter through to the National Health Service. But instead of worrying about paying our doctors and nurses, we should be worrying about the obesity that is causing all of their resources to be used up, including time and money. So sleep is the number one. You've brought it out. I'm going to bring it out again and again, because sleep, to me, is what we're getting wrong in Western society particularly, but also around the world now. Sleep is the area we're getting wrong, and it is going to be damaging to every part of society.
It's prevention before the cure, isn't it?
But it takes time.
Yes.
And everybody these days wants that quick win. They want McDonald's now. They want Netflix now. They want good sleep now. Well, good sleep actually is habitual. You've got to move your behaviors to create good sleep, and it takes a while. You have to move your social habits and therefore educate your friends around your sleep, hence inviting people to dinner to leave by 9:30. They very quickly got it, and now they love it. They still come. We still have a great laugh. They still drink. I don't, but that's because I gave up a long time ago for various different reasons. And the bottom line is everybody has a good night and can still get up next morning at the right time to be successful the next day. Because we all know that that Friday night drink normally leads to a rather suboptimal weekend.
I think this all ties back to that something we've spoken about before, and it ties into this domino effect that you mentioned as well. It's all around routine, habits, choice. Everyone has a choice to make their whole day go one way or another. And it starts from that night, not even the morning of, it's the night before, it's what time you go to sleep. It's the habits you put in place before the next day. Setting out your running clothes, you know, making sure you go for a run. Putting a book on your pillow to make sure you just read, go off your blue screen before you go to bed. And I think that's something that needs to be brought out more. It's just people need to really think about that future self. Do I go make this choice or do I make that choice? And I think that's...
I love the idea of choice. Let's just look at choice. It's hard to be obese. We judge people who are obese, and it's normally very unfair on the person who is overweight, because 80% of obese adults were obese children. They didn't make those choices. It was their parents who made their choices for them that caused them to be obese in adult life. But we judge. And rather than judge, we ought to be asking and being curious about it, because that's where we can help. Because people did not make one choice. They didn't get up one morning and say, I'm going to be fat. It was a multitude of little choices that they made. And that's where one has to be really disciplined. It's really hard to be overweight. Really hard. You are uncomfortable. People treat you differently. You have a different presence. You probably get passed over for promotion. Certainly in the background that I came from, somebody who was overweight in the army was never going to promote as fast as the guy that was fit. Not because you had to be fit, but because you looked wrong.
Yeah.
And therefore it's hard, very hard, to be overweight. But it's also hard not to be overweight. So this is where choice comes out. Choose your hard. Do you want to be uncomfortable and die 20 years younger than your potential? Or do you want to get into a decent sleep routine, add in some proper dietary nutritional principles, and finally do a little bit of exercise? Oh, and by the way, we're talking 60% of weight loss being sleep, 35% being what you put into your body and when, and only 5% being exercise. If you're going to exercise to lose weight, put your sleep right first, then put your nutrition right, and then do some exercise. Which is why I say probably best to stay in bed for an extra hour rather than get on the treadmill. And people will love that idea. But make sure it's quality sleep, preferably before midnight, that you're adding in, not lying in bed several mornings a week, because that's not quality sleep. By the time you lie in bed extra in the morning after the sun has come up, you're not getting the same quality of sleep that you would have done if you'd gone to bed and used that sleep before midnight. So choose your hard. It's hard to be fat. It's hard to be thin. Which hard do you want? Choose your hard. And where you have choice, and we have choice every day, there's normally an easy choice. Let the Netflix just roll on to the next episode. Or the hard choice, which is uncomfortable, which is let's stop it here and pick it up tomorrow night. That's a hard choice because it's much harder to get up, press the button, and to go to bed than it is just to let the thing keep on moving. So you will always get a choice where comfort on one side, and they make it really comfortable for you to do the wrong thing. It's really comfortable to buy cheap food, for instance, because it costs less, but it's normally rubbish. It's really comfortable to get a takeaway because it gets delivered to your door, especially in Dubai, where it takes about 7 minutes to arrive, but it's you don't know what's in it. That's all comfort. What is hard is to go out and buy the right ingredients and spend a wonderful hour with your partner, tossing those ingredients around, ready, steady, cook, and making something that you are actually proud of. And during that time, of course, you've had quality, sociable time doing something with your partner. But it's hard. And for some reason, we go for easy every time. So it's those conscious little decisions that all add together to be health.
So you talked about these choices, right? And I think when we talk on this podcast, we make it seem like this super exciting, motivating thing, but discipline in sleeping on time, in setting boundaries with friends and family is more about the almost boring aspect of setting up systems in advance. Because that's what I've learned in my time is discipline is nothing more than systems. And if you do the simple act of plugging in your phone 10 feet away from your bed, if you do the simple act of putting out your clothes in advance, of setting an alarm that, this is a silly thing, but setting an alarm that requires you to scan a barcode that's in the other room, that's what gets you to do the things that you feel like you need to be motivated to do.
Adnan, that is superb, because you're actually, there's a really good book by a guy called James Clear, which is Atomic Habits. And Atomic Habits talks about stacking your habits so that one thing leads to another thing. And that's exactly what you're talking about. And we can all do that. It takes very little to set up atomic habits, habits that really work. For instance, we go to bed. What do you do before bed, Dan?
The first thing I do is charge my phone up away from the room. I think I've learned to do that.
Okay, fine. But what does everybody do before bed?
Brush your teeth.
Brush your teeth. So how about, instead of saying I'm going to bed early tonight, you get up at 8:30, have an alarm that says brush your teeth. If you go and brush your teeth, I guarantee you'll feel like going to bed afterwards, because we've done it since we were tiny. Most of us were taught to brush our teeth twice a day, when you go to bed and when you get up. And if you brush your teeth, that gives the body the right little stimulus to say, oh, it's bedtime because I've just brushed my teeth. So the very act, instead of saying, I'm going to go to bed on time, say, I'm going to brush my teeth. I'm then going to lock the doors or whatever you do. And I'm going to draw the curtains, take the dog for the last walk in the evening or whatever I do before bed. Do that earlier and then the bed will follow.
Did you add another part to brushing your teeth? I heard someone say.
Well, I stand on one leg when I brush my teeth, but that's just using time efficiently because, of course, if you stand on your leg when you're brushing your teeth, you're actually exercising a myriad of tiny muscles and your balance. And as you get older, your balance goes. Because actually, there's no reason why we should age and become more decrepit. If we continue to use our muscles, they will continue to work for us. And the brain is one of those muscles. So what I try to do in balance terms is this is all about inner ear and eyes and the mirror and brushing my teeth and standing on one leg. Everything's working during the 2 minutes that you're otherwise wasting just scrubbing your teeth. I mean, not wasting, but you could use that time more efficiently. That's why I stand on one leg when I'm brushing my teeth. And actually, I try to shave on my left leg because my left leg's slightly weaker and it takes longer to shave. It could be quite dangerous, too. If I had a cutthroat razor, there'd be all sorts of accidents. It's Atomic Habits is James Clear's book. Really good. And it will make you understand how you can stack your habits to become rituals. And rituals are what you're talking about, Adnan, where you get into a series of consistent behaviors that set you up for a great day, a great week, a great year. And if you can get into those rituals, and one of mine is around sleep, then you're going to be a lot more successful and a lot healthier. Now, we've talked a lot about the physicality of sleep, but what about the mental benefits of sleep? Again, this muscle of our brain. If we don't, when you've broken a leg and you've had it in a cast, the muscle atrophies and you take the cast off and it's much smaller when you take the cast off and you then have to work that leg to bring the muscle back into balance with the rest of your body. And the brain is much the same. If you don't use it, it shrinks, gets smaller, gets less capable. And therefore, when we exercise, we try to use our brains at the same time as exercising. Now, for some of us, that's meditation. If you're out on a bicycle, it's rhythmical. You can get into the moment. What is meditation? But it's thinking about one thing. Well, maybe it's thinking about your pedal stroke. And that is recovering the brain. But the best place for recovery for your brain is sleep. There are certain parts of your brain that fire up when you're asleep that are never fired up during the day. We have to understand that being awake is actually low-level brain damage. Wow, that's a big statement. Okay, so we're damaging ourselves by thinking. Like every muscle, when we use it, we're causing tiny little micro tears that then have to be repaired. Our body is great at repairing them if we give it sufficient rest, and our muscles grow bigger. That's what bodybuilders do. Guess what? Bodybuilders sleep up to 12 hours a day, competitive bodybuilders, because they are recovering from the damage they're doing to their muscles. Now, let's take the brain. And what happens when we have had a heavy day of thinking? You've got a heavy day at work. You've had a couple of HR interviews to deal with. They're always heavy. You're doing a lot of strategic planning for the business. This really matters. You've used your brain power. Well, we only grow if we look at stress plus rest equals growth. So you have to have the stress, yes, thinking hard, brain damage, plus the rest, repairing the brain, happens during sleep, equals growth. So if you want to be brighter tomorrow than you are today, you need the sleep. You need the sleep to allow your brain to recover from the day's brain damage. And what actually happens is that you've got a really good sewerage system. This comes from a chap called Matthew Walker, who wrote a book called Why We Sleep. But you've got a sewerage system in your brain that at night does a really good cleaning job. If you sleep for long enough sleep cycles, the proper sleep cycles, if you give your body, your brain, a chance, it clears out all of the sticky proteins that build up otherwise if you don't get enough sleep. Margaret Thatcher and Ronnie Reagan back in the 80s prided themselves and told everybody who listened that they could run their countries on 4 or 5 hours sleep a night. I met Maggie Thatcher in her older years. She was already gaga. She didn't know who her children were at that point. And she was going to her death not knowing that she'd been prime minister. Ronnie Reagan also died of early onset adult dementia. And it's all down to the lack of sleep. And we know now that we do the damage in our 40s and 50s, and the symptoms come on in our 60s and 70s. And if you don't want to be gaga by the time you're 80, you need to be sleeping properly as we enter those middle years. Now, you two are both young enough not to care, but you'll care soon enough.
So that's an interesting point you made about the fact that people who are younger than, like you mentioned, their 40s and their 50s, why should we care?
Okay, yes, you are much better at recovering because everything works a little bit better. Let's look at the way the body works. I'm afraid you should. I was a smoker. I smoked a lot. I was elite at smoking back in my 20s. Now, the body is really good at recovering the physical systems. But actually, those sticky proteins and the damage you do to your brains early on, your hearing, for instance, if you're going to lots of loud concerts. I went to 50 Cent the other day. I lasted 4 songs. There wasn't a melody in it. I'm sorry, I had to leave. It was accidental. I was waiting for the female vocalist. It never happened. Anyway, my point is that we damage ourselves in our youth, and our bodies are pretty good at repairing the physical pieces. But at the end of the day, we are just replacing cells regularly. Every 8 days, we basically replace every cell in our body. So we're new bodies every 8 days. But we replace them over and over again. And the more you photocopy, the less accurate the photocopy is. And that is what aging is. Now, there are various more complicated parts of the science to this, telomeres, the length of your... Anyway, we are all different and we will all age at different rates. But we can maximize, you can control what you can control. And if you get into good habits as a younger man, then it'll be no difficulty later on. But if you have bad habits as a younger man, let's say you overindulge to the point, again, that you are obese. Well, your body will continue to put out ghrelin long after you get thin again. So you, as a formerly obese man or woman, will struggle for the rest of your life more than the guy who was never obese. In other words, your body starts to produce ghrelin more and more often. It gets good at producing ghrelin, this hormone that makes you want to eat rubbish and crave rubbish. And the body gets better at that, and it continues to be better for the rest of your life. So now, even though you fight your way back, you do all the hard choices to get yourself back to a proper, sensible body weight that will support a long and healthy life, you will still have more cravings than the guy who was never overweight. And that's really unfair. Now, this is about failure, this podcast, and I've got a little story that I'd love to tell if I've got time.
We would love to hear it.
Everybody thinks that Iron Man is a matter of working hard and, you know, training and then going to a race. This particular race was Texas in 2012. And 3 years earlier, I had qualified for the World Championships of Ironman in Kona, my first Ironman. And then I realized over the next 3 years that it wasn't as easy as I thought. On that particular day of qualification back in 2009, basically the fast guys hadn't turned up. And I was competing against a lesser standard than was normal. So I thought I was brilliant because I managed to come third in my age group and therefore qualify. And I passed up, total failure this one, I passed up the opportunity to go to Kona. It was my first Ironman. I qualified. I said, I'll go next year. Next year came round and the real guys turned up. And I discovered that I wasn't very good at this. The following year, I trained and trained and trained and trained. And the real guys turned up again. And you're not very good at this, David. And in 2012, I trained until I was completely blue in the face. I was at the highest level of training I could possibly be. I was absolutely exhausted, and I went off to race. Because I hadn't rested, I actually arrived fitter than I'd ever been, but also more tired than I'd ever been. And this was the first failure. I arrived with sore Achilles because I'd overtrained, unrepaired body, comes back to sleep. I was not recovering. I was doing all the stress and none of the rest, and therefore I hadn't grown. I had just got tired. So into the race. On arrival, I discovered that the chainstay on my bicycle appeared a little floppy. Now, this is something that should be stiff, and it's made of carbon, and basically the bike box had been crushed between Dubai and Texas. And therefore, it was a compromised bike. So I had a compromised body and a compromised bike. Did the swim in what I would call... Have you ever seen how in the southern states of America, some people chew tobacco and then spit? And they spit into a bottle. Well, we were swimming in the contents of that bottle. It was a brown swim. You couldn't see your hand on the end of your arm underwater. And it was fresh water. And it was a wetsuit swim, which was the only saving grace, because if in a wetsuit swim, if you stop swimming, you float. But that was the only saving grace. It was mass start, so there were 2,000 people in a washing machine to start with. And the swim went all right. And then onto the bicycle, and the bicycle was a bit floppy, a bit loose. Now, the one thing you want in a bicycle is stiffness. You want your effort to be translated to power that is transmitted to the road so that you go forwards, not into a floppy part of the bicycle that is broken. Now, I, with hindsight, knew that the bicycle was broken, but I wasn't willing to give up my race. I knew that my body was broken, but I wasn't willing to give up the race. And so from swim to bike, rode the bike reasonably fast, certainly competitively fast, got off the bike and started running. Now, it's all measured in miles in America. I'm pretty sure they're the same length, although their gallons are pretty dodgy. So after 2 miles, I was walking. I now had 24 miles of walking in order to get to the end of the race and the finish line and hopefully qualification. Once you're walking, you realize just how hard going slowly on an Ironman is, or going slowly on a marathon is. And I see you, Dan, wearing a London Marathon top. You know, you're an experienced marathoner. But in this case, you start your marathon. When does your marathon go bad, by the way, normally?
It's...
Or get tough?
17, 18 miles.
This is what everybody says. Marathons turn ugly around the 17 to 20 mile mark. Yep. An Ironman marathon starts ugly. You're getting off the bike after 180 kilometers and a swim of nearly four kilometers. None of us quite managed to do 3.8, which is the course. We wiggle or something and can't sight. But you get off and you're running. And in this case, I ran for the first two, felt awful, and started to walk. And now I was walking. And there was one thing in my mind as we went through, and that was, I've got to spend less time on the run than I did on the bike and the swim. Because otherwise, in our little group, we had a joke that if you spend more time on the run than you did on the bike and swim, then you have to drop your trousers when you go through the finish line. And I didn't want to have to do this. I didn't want to have to. In this country, of course, it would be culturally unacceptable. In America, they would probably find it quite difficult. But anyway, I didn't want to have to do that in this particular case. So I was walking. And as I walked, and it was three laps of this lake for 26 miles, as I walked, I came across, up on my right on a grassy bank, a very vocal supporter of people going past. And it was a female up on the bank, fabulous, telling everybody how well they were doing. And I heard this wonderful cry from my right. And I looked up and I thought, good Lord, somebody's broken an egg on the bank. This lady was so enormous that she was wearing a tarpaulin. She was so enormous that she had spread out on the bank like a broken egg. And she was sitting in the middle of her tarpaulin of her physicality, spread out all over the bank. And this comes back to judgment. Because she was shouting at people and saying, "You're doing well, keep going." And I'd heard this and felt really good about it. And I looked up and I saw her and I said, "Thank you very much, ma'am." And she said, "Not you, the guy behind you running." And for some reason, that hurt more because she was demonstrably unfit. And I felt at that moment that I had made a judgment of her, which I subsequently learned to regret, because I made that judgment on the fact that she was absolutely the largest lady that I had ever seen, ever. And she was basically saying I was not worthy of that encouragement because I was no longer running. And that was my failure, because that judgment meant that I hadn't understood her. I have no idea. If I had had all the same choices to make from birth onwards that she had made, I have no doubt that I would be a hugely obese man, because that was the environment that she grew up in and the choices that she had to make at the time. So the big lesson out of that was my failure. As I walked all the way around this marathon and just got in within 2 minutes of that equal time, and therefore didn't have to bring my trousers down on the finish line. But my failure was that judgment rather than understanding, not understanding her situation and why the powers, the forces had led her to those series of choices, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of small choices that had led her to a place where she'd be lucky to live another 5 years. And I judged her in the moment of anger because she was judging me.
That's changing as a person now as well, isn't it? How you want to be remembered, the choices that you make, the person that you want to be.
Absolutely. And now when I see something, when I see a behavior that would formerly have upset me, instead of saying, but he's an arrogant son of a, what's it? I would instead think, but I wonder what happened to him that he is now that arrogant. Or I wonder what happened to her that she won't let anybody else in front of her in the queue. You know, that she has no giving left. And by being curious rather than judgmental, we get to this place of understanding that is a lot nicer and a lot easier for one's own spirituality, right, sense of right and wrong. And that helps me sleep. Because if I can go to bed at the end of the day without having been judgmental or too judgmental, we are all going to be judgmental. And this is not a matter of black and white. There's shades of gray. But if you can be less judgmental and start to be more curious, then you're going to be much more relaxed and you're going to find it easier to sleep. And this comes down to, let's face it, sleep is the most important thing in our lives. And that race just proved to me that my lack of sleep, my lack of rest, my lack of preparedness, my bad luck with a bike that got broken, everything led to a horrible case of judgment that should not have happened.
But in a way, it was a good thing that it did happen. It was almost like it was meant to be, for that person to be there, for that to happen. For then you to really realize...
You're doing your fail forward thing on me, aren't you? You are. You are. That's absolutely brilliant. But yes, of course. Yes, what you're saying is, if you can learn from getting it wrong, then you're most likely to be a better person for it.
And sometimes getting it wrong in a monumentally painful way is necessary, right?
Yes, absolutely. And that's why, well, actually, I don't know if this links, but I'm going to say it anyway. And that's why you should set really, really high goals and then celebrate a near miss. Because that getting it wrong, getting it just wrong, means that you learn. Whereas if you set a mediocre goal and hit it, well, where's the learning there?
You're successful. There's no reason to do a postmortem, or there's less.
Yes, much less incentive. But actually, it's the one thing we should spend more time on is not working out what we did badly, but what we did well. Because if we work out where we did well, and then double down on those areas where we did well, we're likely to make a lot more gains than if we look at the bits that we did badly. We don't enjoy, we don't get energy from those things, we don't learn quickly in that area. Then are we really, I don't know about you, but at school, I should try harder at maths. Well, actually, no, I'm just not a mathematician. So in later life, I'm going to delegate maths, spreadsheets, in my case, to somebody else and concentrate on inspiring people or motivating people or those areas that I know I enjoy. So double down on your successes and set your goals so high that your failure is better than anybody else's success. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay, set goals so high that when you fail and learn, you've already outperformed everybody else.
Can I ask one more question?
Absolutely.
We've talked a lot about sleep and the importance of sleep. If you had to make one rule for the whole world to follow based around sleep, let's say it was going to be on a billboard, what would that rule be?
Wow. Okay. Regularity. Sleep at the same time, get up at the same time for the rest of your life.
All right. It's been a pleasure, David. Thank you so much.
Adnan, thank you for having me. Dan, thank you very much for having me. It's always fun to talk with you guys. And I love the premise behind Fail Forward. I think that you're helping a huge number of people. So well done. Brilliant. Love being here.
This podcast is sponsored by Optimal Fitness. Are you looking to improve your health and fitness? Come visit us and let the team of certified trainers and state-of-the-art equipment help you reach your goals. With a welcoming community and a team that genuinely cares, Optimal Fitness is the perfect place to start a journey towards a healthier you.
I've been connected to Optimal Fitness since 2014. I actually managed it for about 5 years until COVID, and in COVID it has changed quite a lot. And I'm no longer associated directly with Optimal Fitness, but they support me. I think they're a wonderful community-based gym, and it's the people here who make you feel welcome. It's a mini village of nice people who all have the same thing in their mind, which is to optimize your health and wellness. So Optimal Fitness for me is one of the best in the business and well worth a visit.
Thanks for listening. Leave us a review. Tell us what you think. Find us at Instagram, failforward.pod. If you know someone that wants to be on the show, or if you want to be on the show, give us a shout, DM us, and we'll see you soon.